We're a stranger. We never kid.
Sorry.
That was a joke.
Oh.
If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference, because 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Well, good morning and welcome to Friday, make that Saturday, in the studio. I'm Tom King, and welcome to the program. It's Making Financial Sense with Merle Kelch. I am here in the studio. Merle Kelch is in a super secret and, I would imagine, much warmer location, and he joins us on the telephone this morning. Good morning, sir.
Well, good morning. I do have to admit it is clouding about 50 degrees this morning, and it's just cold. It's terrible.
Yeah, not as warm as Florida usually is this time of year.
I'm really enjoying the fact of this, folks, that I have more and more clients moving to Florida, so I, of course, have my Florida securities license in. So one of my best buds has also bought a house and moved down here to Florida, which makes it really handy for me to come visit my clients in Florida, as well as to overnight by his house for the weekend. And every once in a while, there's a motorcycle that pops in the way. So that's just a terrible thing I have to do and endure when the weather at home is so cold.
Well, we can still take folks' questions today. The phone lines are open, 715-845-2155. We have a conference call feature on our phone system, so we can conference you in with Merle, even though he is sitting in his pajamas. Or did you get dressed this morning?
Well, I've showered.
Well, that's great. Okay. Let's start with a column I was just reading in on MarketWatch from Mark Culbert this morning. It says, "Don't fall in love with your stocks. How to know when it's time to sell." And I would imagine for many people, that's difficult, that once you buy a stock, you're all excited when you buy it. You think you love the company is doing well.
Sure.
And then it gets to a point where it may be time to sell, whether it's gone up high enough or whether, you know, and we've talked about this in the past, that it's not a time to sell when the stock goes down in many cases, because then you've bought it at a higher price and selling it at a low price. You don't want to do that. But how do you get convinced people not to fall in love with their stocks and look at them with a, you know, with a critical eye and determine when it is time to sell a particular stock?
Well, how do you convince people of that? Well, you can't. Okay, so just move on to the next thing. No, just eating. You know, and folks, I apologize. I hit an allergy down here. It's just kicking my can. So in here, you know, if we take a look at what's going on, we have to be not emotional, but think with our heads and about investments. And I said it so many times. Many times our initial reaction either to buy or to sell is usually wrong. It's usually the opposite of it, think about. You know, if you're looking at all the stuff that's going on, I'd like to get into this, you know, scary 1929 Dow chart. We'll talk about that one because I've been getting a ton of calls and emails about that stuff. But if we take a look at it, you know, the whole world's talking about how the market's going to fall apart and disappear. And then you hear, Icon and Einhorn and Buffett, all these guys are doing, they're sitting here buying up big stocks. Even George Soros is buying up some stocks. They're buying J.P. Morgan and Citigroup and GM and BP and Anadarko and, Aetna and USG. So they're buying all these different companies. Why are they buying? Because, you know, what's happening is that everybody's having panic in the marketplace. We obviously had a recent drop in the marketplace aside from this past week where we've come up. And so they're buying in because they're not emotionally attached to their investments and their individual stocks or mutual funds, whatever the case may be. So looking at Mark Hulbert's article in here, he goes to the classic thing that people do. And we get this with Professor Chuck used to tell us, fear-greed syndrome, fear that the stock market was going to go to zero and the greed that it was going to go up indefinitely and forever become the next Winnebago, which, of course, made people just mountains of money, or Walmart, if you will. So, you know, in that, we have to make sure that we look at a percentage gain or a percentage loss that we're willing to accept. You know, if we buy a good stock and it continues to keep moving forward, fantastic. We've got to keep moving forward. But we have to make sure we have measures of risk along the way and make sure that portfolio is not making, or that individual stock, for example, is not making our portfolio riskier than others. And we've talked about in the program before, this beta-weighted average that we've chatted about. We've had a lot of people ask questions about that one afterwards. But, you know, if we spend our time researching a good quality stock, some of the things that we have to put in our mind is, how long are we going to hold it? You know, a lot of time people get nervous about their investment or their stock portfolio. They say, boy, we made money for a year, let's get out. Well, if you're only in it for a year, then you just got lucky you didn't invest. Does that make sense? So So if we put money into an investment, we have to put it in there and say, well, this is going to be money we're going to sit there for 3 or 5 years, so I don't care what happens with it. Because we know the market's going to go up or down, but it's going to trend going north. That's what happens with an economy. That's what happens with the marketplace. And so, bottom line, you can't get emotional. You have to set some rules or parameters up ahead of time. You can't just simply say, I'm going to be in the market for a year and see what happens. If you just try to guess what's going to happen instead of a year, that's not investing, that's betting. So we have to go back to the old important things we talk about in this program, diversify, 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 and make sure it's money that you can have invested for a while. It's not a short-term run when you invest. It's longer-term. Now, that being said, sometimes you get lucky, and you have the ability to start investing when the marketplace is down. Last number of weeks has certainly been one of those times.
Well, one general rule of thumb that he uses is to, he says, to subject your stocks to the same valuation criteria that you used when you initially decided to buy them. If you bought a stock
Absolutely.
Because the price-earnings ratio is well below the markets, for example, then you should consider selling it if its P.E. is now well above. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. This goes right back into what I said before, measuring your risk. A lot of times the stocks that grow the fastest in our portfolio are those, let's say, that are mid-cap companies, mid-cap size. And boy, last year there were mutual funds folks all over the place that did 30, 35. In fact, some that we worked with were even did 40% for a rate of return last year. Now, this doesn't mean they're going to do it for the next year, et cetera, et cetera. We all know how that part works. Past performance don't guarantee the future. But in knowing that those individual companies on the inside now are also the portfolios that grew the fastest, but they're also the riskiest. So a couple things have happened. One, we can either measure to see if we have too much of that stock by measuring, as you said, the P.E. ratio, which measures the price based upon the earnings of the company. And the second way to look at it is to say, what's the risk of the overall portfolio? And do we need to trim some investments back to make sure that our risk parameters are back where we originally set? And so in doing that, it's exactly correct. We, of course, have to make sure we have some safeguards, some plans in it, but checking the P.E. to the total works just as efficiently and effectively, in my opinion, as doing the risk.
One of the other things he suggests is that it's not just individual investors who do this, have a strong aversion to selling, that the big guys do too. And he suggests that if you're watching Wall Street analysts and what they're suggesting, be aware that just 25 stocks within the S&P 1500 index have a consensus analyst recommendation to either sell or are underweight at this point, while two-thirds fall into the buy or overweight category. So it's his position that if you see an analyst who actually says you should sell a particular stock, you should give that more weight because they don't do it that often.
Well, it's still true. There's somebody saying sell the stock, there's something wrong with the stock. Why not take a look and see the reasoning for it? There's got to be some sort of background between the reasoning. But let me also tell you that analysts almost always say buy. So I think there's a pretty good reasoning if they're saying sell a stock. Somebody knows something is going around in there someplace. Or there's news that you may not have thought or picked up on an individual stock. Analysts tend to almost always say buy an individual stock. I don't know why that's the case. They can always find a reason to say buy the stock. It's a beautiful stock. But I agree with that on the sell. Somebody says sell, there's got to be something going on with it in most instances. So with it, I think you also have to take a look at what's going on in the overall general economy. So we got to add some of that in there, too.
715-845-2155, the number to call. If you have a question for Earl, give us a call. Phone lines are open. We'll be right back with more after this on WSAU.
This new magic stock market calculator?
Magic what?
A New York PhD mathematician has invented what he calls a magic stock market calculator. It's making thousands of people across the country a lot of money.
That sounds a little...
I know. I was skeptical at first, but then I checked it out. It's actually based in solid mathematics. Plus, it turns out employees at some of the top money management firms on the planet are now using this guy's magic calculator. People at Bank of America, Wells Fargo, Wachovia, Morgan Stanley, and UBS.
And they're making money?
Tons of money. I've actually been using it, and it really works. See, it's all based on a precise mathematical formula that shows you how to time your investments as close to perfection as possible.
Wow, sounds pretty amazing.
Yeah, you've got to see it for yourself. Just go to MagicCalculator2.com. The inventor has a free online video that shows you exactly how it works and how you can use it for yourself. It's free, and it can make you tons of money. Watch the video now while it's still up. Go to MagicCalculator2.com. That's MagicCalculator, the number 2.com.
All right. I know this isn't any fun to talk about, but we should. So, who's going to do what? Flashlights?
Nowhere to be found.
Where to be found. Batteries?
Dead.
Great. Emergency supply kits?
Not packed.
No. What about blankets?
We have an old towel.
Good enough. Cell phones?
May not work.
Emergency water?
Not a drop.
And what about food?
Nope.
Perfect. We all know where we're meeting if we're separated, yeah?
The library!
Aunt Joan's house.
The bus stop.
Great. And I'll be waiting here wondering where you all are. Sounds like we don't have a plan. Who's up for mini golf?
Winging it is not an emergency plan. Make sure your kids know what to do during an emergency. Who to call, where to meet, what to pack. Visit ready.gov/kids for tips and information. A public service announcement brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
There are so many places to get news like this.
Justin Bieber charged with assault in Canada.
Wow, winning.
But there's only one place that makes sense of it all and how it affects you.
Give America a race.
Apparently going to be a significant storm.
Whether it's news like this.
Philip Seymour Hoffman, who was a just remarkable talent.
Or news like this.
Serious chemical weapons is not a game.
This.
It's real. It's important.
On WSAU and WSAU.com.
And we're back here in the studio. I'm Tom King, along with Merle Kelch, Kelch & Associates in Wausau, coming to us on the phone from Florida today. And you said during the break that you had something you wanted to touch on?
There's this article that's going around out there right now, and let me pop up the article. That is a scary 1929 market chart.
Oh, I heard about this. Tell us what this is all about.
Well, what has happened is there's an analyst. I'm waiting for the article to pop up, so I have his name for me, but there's a chartist, and a chartist or a technical advisor, folks, or technical, somebody who does technical charts, and there's a name for it, and it's escaping me at the moment. But nonetheless, what happened is a gentleman who found out probably about mid-January or so, and he tuned the market from 1929 to make it resemble, I shouldn't say make it resemble, but put it against our market today, and said that, well, it looks like we're going to have a big crash like 1929, and the whole world's going to fall apart. By the way, folks, don't worry about that. That's not going to be the case. But in here, now we have to take a look at a couple things. And so there's some analysis. And excuse me, I'm going to sneeze, folks.
That's beautiful. I've been having that as well up here. I'm sure many people have. The idea when you have to sneeze and you can't, but then how much relief there is when you actually do it.
Oh, it's fantastic. Well, I'll tell you what, folks, there's all the vehicles down here covered with this yellow pollen, and obviously my body isn't used to this pollen.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, here we take a look at the charts, and they put the charts together, I apologize, the name's not popping in front of me, but I want you to take a look at this article, especially if you take a look at the marketplace, and there's a note that they've done a good analysis on here, and it's not from Hulbert. Hulbert actually had an article that came out earlier in the week, but there's one that's talking about the consensus on scary 1929 chart, enough already, it's not happening. This written yesterday afternoon at noon. And so in here, you can find this on marketwatch.com. It's part of the front articles, and I strongly suggest you read it because it puts all the stuff, hopefully, in my opinion, at rest. So in November, market timer, Tom DeMarc, stirred into the retro pot again, telling CNBC, and I'm reading verbatim, that the market could unravel quickly. Well, I'm on here. Who knows if that's going to happen, but it's highly doubtful that it will. They go in here talking on a consistent basis about why it's not going to work. And one of the biggest things that happened, or that they did in here, is they compared the 1929 marketplace to the 2012 to 14 marketplace by making it so that we had the same percentage gains. Okay, so essentially they inflation adjusted, for lack of a better term, they inflation adjusted the marketplace from 1929 to the 2012 and 2014. And when you do that, there's absolutely no comparison. Now, are there some comparisons to how the market has gone over the course of the last couple of years? Certainly. But remember, the market always takes on that approach of two steps forward, one step backward kind of mentality. It's like the big waltz we're going through, Tom, in case you've ever waltzed before. So if we adjust it, there's really not a lot of comparison at all. 1929 went up much faster, much quicker, and came down like a rocket, much more than we saw just recently. And so with it, we then have to analyze and go back, Tom, to what happened prior to 1929 and the Great Depression, and what happened inside of the marketplace since then. And some of the biggest ones are just sweeping banking reform. You know, banks at that particular point in time had the ability to be investment houses. You know what? We had this sort of stuff happening again in 2008. We all saw it happen. And so we had the Glass-Steagall Act in place at that point in time to make sure that commercial banks were commercial banks, investment banks were investment banks, and insurance companies and mutual funds were separate items at that point in time. You couldn't commingle the three. We saw that problem kind of happen in 2008 and 2009. We all know what happened to the market then, and those things were corrected. And though the Glass-Steagall Act wasn't reinstated, the spirit of the Glass-Steagall Act, making sure that stuff was all separate, came back with the Dodd-Frank bill. We also saw at that particular point in time the creation of the Securities Exchange Commission in 1933, and my compliance officer is going to be really happy that I actually know what year that happened in. So in 1933, we had the creation of the Securities Exchange Commission, which did a couple things.
We've got technology in place now to stop a huge crash like that from accelerating like it did back then. But as far as the security, a couple of things. As far as the Security and Exchange Commission goes, there's been talk, especially when we had these meltdowns in 2007 and before that, that the Securities and Exchange Commission wasn't doing what it was intended to do, that it was basically ignoring some of the situations that were causing the problems, that people were put in place in positions of power at the SEC that had too many ties to the industries that they were supposed to be overseeing. Is that still a problem? Is the SEC still as toothless as it might have seemed 10, 15, 20 years ago?
You know, Tom, it's a fair question. I think if I look at the amount of additional testing and compliance and paperwork that I have to fill out, I'm saying no. They've got this stuff back on track.
Well, for you guys, and let's face it, as big as you are in my world as far as investments go, you're a small fish compared to the guys on Wall Street with Goldman Sachs and those guys. So those are the guys I'm talking about. The guys that can really make markets move, the guys that can, and up or down, that they can control and manipulate markets. Those are the guys the SEC really needs to be looking at, right?
Well, the Securities Exchange Commission and FINRA work together as far as creating rules and watching the rules. And there's just some amazing things that have been happening from a regulatory standpoint. I know we're getting away from the article, but we'll come back to that, folks. You know, things that have happened, there's been unprecedented amount of insider trading trials that are going on. It's still largely as a result of 2008, 2009, where you can see people and hedge fund managers largely, and I'm not saying they're the only one guilty or they're all guilty. That's, of course, let me make sure I say that. But there's just unprecedented amount of prosecution that's happening right now for insider trading, which, of course, is illegal. You can't do that. You can't just go out and start doing it. But if you have knowledge that the market hasn't known, the market has to know about it before you act upon it. Otherwise, it's called insider trading, and it's an unfair practice. Does it happen every day? Probably, but the big players are getting hit and going to jail right now. So we see that happening on an ongoing basis. The other part of it is just huge regulation and adherence to the regulation that's already been there. You know, there's certain things. You can't have Warren Buffett, for example. He can't go out and decide he's going to buy 5% of a company and not announce it. He has to, like everybody else, has to make sure that it's all announced ahead of time. And he can't say, I'm going to buy 0.5%. I'm going to have all my buddies do 0.5% too, so we'll all own it collectively together. You can't do that stuff, and those regulations have been there. And the adherence to that, in my opinion, is stronger than it's ever been. So I think the Securities Exchange Commission, in my opinion, has woken up. Certainly FINRA has. They put more rules, regulations, and so forth on us as advisors. And so I think they're stronger than they've ever been at this particular point in time. Are they as strong as they should be? I don't have an answer to that one, but I think they're stronger than they have been in a very long time in that regards.
Go ahead. Well, going back to the Glass-Steagall Act that you mentioned, I think Bill Clinton even admitted that the worst mistake of his presidency was to allow the Glass-Steagall Act to go away.
I agree.
And with the Dodd-Frank bill that was put in place, obviously took a lot of heat from certain parts of the government and certain parts of the financial industries who basically came out and said it was too tough and it was watered down a bit. And there were some, and give me your reaction to this, because there were some on Wall Street, some of the heavy hitters, that suggested that we don't need the Consumer Protection Agency, and we don't need the Dodd-Frank Act. We can police ourselves. We can self-police these problems. They said that with a straight face. I mean, how do you take something like that?
You know, Tom, I tend to be a pretty conservative guy, but I also think there needs to be some regulation to make sure that people are going the right direction. And I'm a person who doesn't like regulation. I think I like free will and let them run. But at the same time, here's one thing that we know is going to happen with human nature. The reason communism fell and is having issues is because we are human and we don't like it when somebody says you can only do this because we want to do this plus one. That is the nature of human beings. That's the reason that we continue to evolve and continue to keep going, in my opinion, is because we always want to see the next thing. We always want to do the next thing or what else is out there. That's the reason we have all these satellites and stuff running around space. That being said, when it comes to the investment marketplaces, there's no rules or regulations, and we don't have Glass-Steagall Act. We have completely good and legitimate commercial banks, all of a sudden trying to make sure they're getting the best rate of return for the shareholders, because that's what they're supposed to be doing. But then they're doing things and taking some risks that's supposed to be good, but it's a risk that's undue of the stockholders, and it ends up causing some significant problems. For example, here is the credit default swaps. Credit default swaps, when they were signed into being, were supposed to be for banks to share risk back and forth. But you had a couple things happen at the same time during this period of time, and that was that credit default swaps were unregulated. There wasn't any rules to them. And the reasoning for it was, well, why do we need to have rules with this stuff? Because it's just simply banks going back and forth. And in the words of Alan Greenspan, he simply said, well, who would have thought that banks would have actually shot themselves in the foot? And that's what banks did. They did credit default swaps. And then credit default swaps began being used as insurance policies for almost anything and everything. Lehman Brothers was writing credit default swaps, which was just nothing more than an insurance policy, betting that if the price of oil went down, they would pay off whoever wrote the original contract. And hence, we saw oil prices go up to $140 a barrel in 2007. So with all this stuff going on, we had an investment vehicle that was created to share the risk in a very high quality, AAA-rated mortgages back and forth between banks, and it turned out becoming insurance for hedge fund managers for almost anything, including oil. So in that, I think we need regulation that we know what's going on. And so with that, we have regulation to make sure that, you know, we don't have insider trading. We have regulation that investment vehicles are duly noted and are fair for everybody to see, so everybody knows what's going on and can make up their own, you know, decision on the risk. And all that stuff, I think, is very needed going on. So Glass-Steagall makes sure that our commercial bank in the corner isn't doing credit default swaps and going broke. Because if a bank goes broke, folks, we're protected. I mean, the FDIC is going to make sure that we're all right. But it costs us as taxpayers the money to make sure that that bank's bailed out and so forth. And so I think it's needed for that type of regulation.
All right, 715-845-2155. We're going to take a break for some news. We'll come back with more. Earl Kelch, Making Financial Sense here on WSAU.
Let's talk about the X's and O's of family entertainment. Every parent in Wisconsin knows the importance of being able to draw up an activity that'll get you out of the house for a couple of hours. But it needs to be affordable. It needs to be family-friendly. Above all, it needs to be fun. Now, let's talk about high school sports. Bang for your buck, school sports provide the perfect game plan for your family. You'll enjoy all of the drama and excitement competitive sports offer. You'll be supporting the future leaders of our community in a meaningful way. Best of all, you can take the entire family without breaking the bank. Heck, you won't even dent it. Now, enough chalk talk. Let's get out there and see what's playing at the high school in your community. School sports. Good for our kids, good for our community. This message presented by the Wisconsin Interscholastic Athletic Association and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
News now from AM 550, FM 99.9, WSAU.
I'm Tom King, WSAU News. People as far away as Atlanta say they felt the effects of an earthquake that hit near the Georgia-South Carolina border. The USGS says last night's magnitude 4.1 quake was centered near the town of Edgefield, South Carolina. No injuries or damage were reported. President Obama says the nation relies on California's agriculture industry and is pledging aid for a drought there. He made the comments at a barren farm in Los Banos while promising to get millions of dollars in federal aid for the state's agriculture industry. Neillsville utility workers have located the source of their water leak that dropped water pressure to very low levels. The frost over the broken water main kept the water below ground and impossible to see. Utility workers had to dig in strategic places to locate the leak. They'll spend today digging up the area where the broken pipe was found to do the repairs. City officials urge residents to boil their water before drinking or using it for cleaning and dishwashing as a precaution until further notice. Former Green Bay Packers safety Darren Sharper was charged with two counts of rape and other charges in Los Angeles yesterday. According to prosecutors, the 38-year-old is accused of raping several women by using a date rape drug in their drinks. Sharper is accused of drugging and sexually assaulting at least seven women in four states. He played with the Packers from 97 to 2004. The Newsline 9 weather forecast for today. We're looking for increasing clouds with some light snow possible and a high around 17. Tonight, partly cloudy, a low of 9 below. Sunday, partly cloudy with increasing clouds later on. A chance for the snow to return later on Sunday. High temp 23. Monday, snow possibly mixed with ice or freezing rain and a high of 31. Tuesday, mostly cloudy and mild with a high around 34. Wednesday, mostly cloudy, continued mild with a high of 36. That's news and weather. I'm Tom King, Central Wisconsin's Fox News station, WSAU.
One day, I'll teach chemistry to kids.
I'm going to be an architect.
My dream is to be a chef.
At the U.S. Department of Education's Office of Federal Student Aid, we provide more than $150 billion each year in grants, loans, and work study funds, making higher education possible for anyone at any stage of life.
I can go back to college.
I can change careers.
I can make a difference.
Federal Student Aid, proud sponsor of the American Mind. Learn more about money for college at studentaid.gov.
There's a high degree that something will detonate, something will go off.
Russia's counterterrorism efforts.
Another news update's coming up at the top of the hour.
I'm not that impressed.
To give lawful same-sex marriages full and equal recognition.
And to our Olympians in Sochi.
Hear about it.
Go Team USA.
Be sure the border is secure. Be sure that you have a workforce enforcement program that works.
Then stick around and talk about it.
That, to me, is the pathway to immigration.
On WSAU and WSAU.com.
WSAU, back in the studio. I'm Tom King. Merle Kelch on location today, doing the show by phone. And spoiler alert, at the U.S. Olympics, if you don't want to know what's going on in the men's hockey game, plug your ears for just a moment, because I'm going to tell you right now that Rover native Joe Pavelski just scored a power play goal for the United States, and they are leading the Russians 2-1 in that game. I believe it's in the second period in a big matchup in the preliminary rounds in Sochi. All right, we are back here. Merle Kelch with us on the phone here from Florida. Merle, we've got a phone call here, so let's see if we can get this connected. Good morning. Who am I talking to?
Hi. You're talking to Suzanne from Wisconsin Rapids.
Hi, Suzanne. You're on with Merle. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. I have just a quick question. I thought I had observed that MasterCard was up to around 600-something per share, and now I purchased a copy of the Wall Street Journal this week and noticed that it was down to 79, and I'm assuming some sort of split happened. I was wondering if you would verify that situation for me or deny it, Merle. And the other thing is also if you would say, if that is the case, that they had a big split, if what your thoughts are as to whether this would be a good time to purchase that stock. And if you have any comment about Visa comparison or contrast, I'd appreciate that also. And I believe I'll get off the line then and wait for the answer.
All right, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
What we'll do on that one, Suzanne, is we'll take a break here a little bit, and I'll give you a chance to pop it up, take a look at a couple of quick things, okay? So hang on with us. We will make sure we get that answer to you here after our next break. Folks, let me say that the opinions voiced in this program and show are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. Determine which investments may be appropriate for you. Consult your attorney, accountant, financial advisor, or tax advisor prior to investing. Folks, this show contains forward-looking statements that may not come true. Securities investment advisory services offered. Yeah, going up and finishing up on this 1929 article, if we take a look at this, a few of the things that are in place that make it so that today is not, and not anything close to like the 1929 article, is that we talked about the Glass-Steagall Act was put in place and keeping banks down, the Securities Exchange Commission was created, as well as the now what's called FINRA. Also, the thing is the investment advisory companies are now regulated, which means mutual funds now had regulations to them. And more importantly, the two things that really helped bring things down in 1929 were margin accounts. At that particular point in time, Tom, you could take your $10 and you could buy $100 worth of stock. So when the marketplace came crashing down, when you had a margin call, you didn't have any money for it. Today, you can only buy, if you have a dollar, you can only buy $50 or 50 cents more of a stock. So you can only have a 50% margin call versus a 90% margin call at that particular point in time. That was one of the things that really leveraged the stock market at that point. So when the margin calls came and nobody put money inside of the margin calls, the banks that had all those loans that were out there, the loans all became bad, and then the banks didn't have any money. So it all dried up really quickly. As well as banking regulation, we talked about the Glass-Steagall Act, as well as banks having a certain amount of equity and liquidity built into them too. So in it would also happen in 1928 where there were huge interest rate rises. And somebody had made the connection and saying, well, the stopping of the tapering for the Federal Reserve is the same way and nowhere near the amount of effect that interest rates that tapering is causing at this particular point in time is negligible compared to the interest rates that are going up in 1928. So for those that are listening out there right now and thinking about what happened in 1929 and whether or not that is going to have an issue for you today, it just seems to really be unfounded. Could there be some more corrections and bumps? Absolutely. But as far as coming down some, 30 or 40% as it did in 1929 in the marketplace, nobody sees it out there. Especially we have our friends in the UP. I shouldn't say UP. Let's just say Michigan in general. And the consumer sentiment remains unchanged, even though things are a little crazy. And I think what it is, it's just so cold, they're froze. They couldn't make any phone calls, so we don't know.
All right.
Consumer sentiment continues to be just fine as well.
All right, let's go back to the phone here this morning. Good morning. Who are we talking to?
Good morning. This is Chuck.
Hey, Chuck, you're on with Merle. Go ahead.
Hey, yeah.
Good morning, Merle.
Quick question. I was just wondering if Merle would know the minimum after 70 and a half, the percentage of the minimum deduction that you have to take on IRAs?
Sure. Yeah, the percentage is going to be in the year in which you turn age 70 and a half. If you have a pen handy, it's going to be
3.649%. 3.649%, huh, percent.
Yep, you could round up and say 3.65 if you wanted.
Okay, 3.65. But will that stay the same then for the remainder of years, or does it change every year?
Unfortunately, Chuck, it's the calculation that percentage goes up every year. Remember, it's the calculation of the – so if you turn 79 and a half, let's say today.
70 and a half.
Okay.
70 and a half, yeah.
If you turn 70 and a half, my apologies. If you turn 70 and a half today, it's going to be based upon the December 31st of last year's number. So you need the value of December 31st of prior year to do the calculation of that 3.649%. So next year it's going to go up because you get a little bit older. Now, you can find that universal table almost any place. Certainly, Chuck, if you got a hold of us, we'd be happy to send you a copy of it. It's nothing that we have. It's out there all over the place, a universal table that does that calculation. But it goes up a little bit each year. So by the time you end up inside of your later 70s, it's getting pretty close to 5% a year that you have to take out of your IRA accounts.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. 715-845-2155. Phone lines are open if you have a question from Earl here this morning. Now, earlier in the program, you were talking about some of the big guns and some of the companies that they are buying at this point in time. And MarketWatch has some of them listed, including Warren Buffett adding GE and USG and Carl Icahn boosting his Apple stake and selling Netflix, and Einhorn picking up BP and some other companies. And one of the stocks they're talking about, it says George Soros has bought more GM, and other hedge fund big guys are taking a shine to General Motors as well. Any idea why General Motors is tripping their trigger at this point in time?
You know, the only reason I'm seeing in here is that General Motors is selling some cars, getting some cars sold. You're noticing the same exact thing that I did today, Tom, and welcome to the Republican Party. You're thinking like a good, true conservative.
Yeah, following the big dogs, although for a Republican to follow George Soros, that's probably against the rules, right?
Well, it certainly could so. You know, General Motors Corp, they've been selling some cars, and I think that's the reason for it. I have not had a chance to dig in more and take a look at it, but hedge fund managers are buying it. George Soros is buying it. A lot of people are buying the stock, and I don't have a reason other than the fact I can tell you that since December 17, shares about 13.6%, doing off pretty good. They've dropped down, but people are looking at what they're doing, what they're selling, and that's the quickest I can get off the top of my head.
All right. Well, maybe
maybe
during the break, while you're looking up the MasterCard stuff, you can also check on GM and see why they're becoming so popular these days.
We can do so.
Let's go back to the phone here for a moment. Good morning. Who are we talking to?
This is Michael from Wausau.
Michael, go ahead.
I'm not morning, sure Michael. What this glass, I don't know if I'm saying it right, Glass-Steagall Act is. Or the law. Could you explain what that is? I'll listen out the air. And also, I want both of your opinions on it. If you think the stock market is going to crash again like it did in 1929,
well, Michael, have you been listening?
You.
Have you been listening? We just talked about that, and Merle does not think it's going to crash like 1929. And just give him a quick primer on the Glass-Steagall Act, what it was when it was in place.
All right, Michael, the Glass-Steagall Act was an act that was enacted. I believe it was 1936. I think when it came out, the Glass-Steagall Act came out, and it was to separate a commercial bank, which is the bank that we have down in the corner we go get our car loan from and our house loan from, to separate that from an investment bank, which is a bank that would help finance, for example, the old, I can't say Smith Barney, not there anymore either, like J.P. Morgan or something like that, their investment arms. Morgan Stanley is probably the best example of this, would finance, say, large corporate transactions such as corporate buyouts and this type of stuff. So to separate those two so they couldn't be the same thing. It also separated out that an insurance company had to be an insurance company. It couldn't be an investment house, and as well as also then added in there later on so mutual funds that remained mutual funds that couldn't do commercial banking. So the Glass-Steagall Act made sure that everybody had their function, their component in our society, and it didn't cross the line so that our conservative money that we had in our checking and savings accounts didn't end up being leveraged and that bank in trouble because of trying to do commercial banking. So if we use an example of AIG, which, of course, was an insurance company, and by the way, folks, a very good insurance company, still did very well. They all of a sudden started doing investment banking with credit default swaps around the world, and that's the part that got them in trouble. So the insurance side of their world did beautifully, did fantastic, and continues to do well. And, in fact, that part of the world made the money back that we as taxpayers got back from those with our amounts. But the investment banking side where they got commingled is where they had problems. And so it was designed to help fix those things. From the 1929 crash we went through, Michael, just summarizing, in 1929 there's a whole bunch of things that didn't exist at that point in time that do today, such as the Glass-Steagall Act, which made sure that stuff was separate. The Securities Exchange Commission didn't exist. Investment Advisory Acts were in place. We had large margin requirements where people could leverage their dollars quite a bit. We can't do that anymore, thank God. We have banking, of course, regulation that occurred. Securities insurance regulation have occurred, and we had a huge rising interest rate environment. These were having inflationary problems at that point in time. None of those things are in place, like the 1929 thing. And, Michael, I suggest go on out to MarketWatch.com. There's a number of articles in there about 1929 versus today.
All right, and while he's doing that and while we are taking a break, Burl is going to look up MasterCard and try to answer the question our caller had a bit earlier on what's going on with that stock. And we'll take a break while he's doing that, and we'll be back with more Making Financial Sense on WSAU.
Take a look under your bed. Find stuff under there? What about jobs? No? Now try your basement. There's a pair of overalls that, overall, you're not so into anymore. A perfectly good laptop that hasn't seen your lap in months. And even more stuff. But still no jobs? Well, you really have both. See, stuff is defined as household articles considered as a group. Sometimes this stuff is no longer needed. Wait, no longer needed? That can't be right. Because remember those jobs you were looking for? Those are really needed. And they're the stuff inside your stuff. Even inside that winter coat that moved with you to Phoenix. Our job is to unlock those jobs. and it starts when you donate your stuff to your local Goodwill. Here's how we do it. When you donate to Goodwill, we sell your stuff to provide job training for people right here in your community. So just by teaming up with Goodwill, you help create jobs. And isn't that worth parting with the leftover keytar from your 80s cover band? Goodwill. Donate stuff. Create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
When you were a little kid and you thought about what you wanted to be, teaching was at the top of your list. But things changed. And as you got older, teaching didn't seem like the best option anymore. So you're thinking you'll be something else. But what would your 12-year-old self say? Now you want to be a doctor. You don't think teachers save lives? 25 at a time. An actress? Try playing a different role every time the bell rings. How about a scientist? Ever heard of physics? Chemistry? Who do you think teaches that? Teachers today are breaking down obstacles, finding innovative ways to instill old lessons, and taking learning far beyond the four walls of the classroom. It's time to recognize that great things are happening in teaching and put it back on your list. Don't try to convince yourself otherwise. You had it right the first time.
Find out how you can make more at teach.org. Make more. Teach. Brought to you by Teach and the Ad Council.
It's Practical Polly Radio. I've switched to cooking with healthier oils. So now what do I do with all these tubs of lard? Skinny jeans feeling too tight? A bit of lard on your hips and thighs and those pants slide on like a dream. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils, like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
If you're looking out the window, you will not see the first signs of spring, nor will you feel them beneath your winter coat or smell them in the air. The first sign of spring can only be heard here.
Hey, get up! Get out of here, go!
Brewers Baseball.
Oh, you talk about being pumped. Oh, boy.
On AM 550, FM 99.9, WSAU.
And we're back here. Another Olympic spoiler alert for you. So if you're not interested in hearing about the hockey game, close your ears for a moment. The Russians tied the game with a power play goal. It's 2-2 late in the third period against the United States at the Olympics. But the Russians just got an interference penalty. And so the United States will be on the power play here to try to get the game winner. We'll see what happens in the last few minutes of that game. But right now, we are in the last few minutes of Making Financial Sense with Merle Kelch here on the radio. And Merle, we had a caller earlier who was asking about MasterCard stock. What did you find out?
Well, I can't find anything about the split that's in here, but certainly it was a split because I know that the share price is considerably higher at the moment. Was considerably higher just recently. So I'm guessing there's a reverse split somewhere. I'm sorry, not a reverse split, but there's a split someplace. It may have been 3 or 4 to 1. So the share price right now is $77.49. So, if this price, let's say, was 10 times that at $770 per share, it doesn't mean that you have any more money. It just means that you have more shares. The share price is less. So I'm hoping this is helping Suzanne from that standpoint. But for not only MasterCard, symbol MA, but also for Visa, symbol is Visa, which is the Visa's at $225 per share right now, in both instances, the analysts from MarketWatch.com are saying overweight, which simply means to buy some more stuff, put a lot more money inside of both of those stocks. So that being the case, it's all the information that I have, and of course, in a short period of time here. But, it seems to make sense because if we take a look at, with interest rates being so low, Tom, everybody's looking to try to get some money someplace or try to get a little bit better extra, kick in our dollar. And what's one place that's always continually getting 20 or 25% from credit cards? And, of course, that would be the credit card companies themselves. Mm-hmm. So that in itself would lend that they would have some pretty good profit on the inside. And so it seemed to me that there'd be some pretty good places to go. Certainly, we could take a look at their sales, and their sales are not going down in the amount of people using them, unlike in 2007, 2008, where there was actually less and less people using credit cards. It appears, unfortunately, that the expansion of consumer debt like this is going up a little bit, which bodes well for both of those companies. So, again, the stock from ConsumerMarketWatch.com, their analyst estimates say overweight, which means buy more of it, in both instances. GM in here, as I'm looking at the stock, we have analyst estimates. And, again, we see all the big people filing all over the place. There's some 1 million shares just traded by a hedge fund on Friday. And unfortunately, I popped that page or turned that page already. But in here, the information on GM also is to overweight, interestingly enough. So that being the case, we can see people are saying overweight. Why exactly, I'm not really sure. Of course, they're saying to buy it. It seems to be one of those things where I think people know something that we don't know, Tom, because we're just a couple of guys out here in Wausau. But we see a list of the companies that are, throughout the course of the last couple of days, buying a ton of stock, and I'm not seeing any news why. I'm looking at the news over the course of the last couple of days, and the names that I'm seeing buying the shares go down to, Janet Partners. Of course, Warren Buffett, we're seeing it through Hathaway. David Einhorn is buying it. Kyle Bass, Janet Partners, and this is Leon Corporation, Soros, Dan Loeb, hedge funds, hedge funds across the board are buying, buying GM shares. Why? I don't know. But again, analysts are also saying, overweight or to buy it as well. So it appears as though that somebody knows something that we don't know, folks. Am I telling you to go out and buy it? Nope. But on MarketWatch.com and everybody else around is starting to buy GM shares, and GM shares are about where they've been over the course of the last several months or so. So it doesn't appear as though they've been running up yet, but my guesstimation is somebody thinks and believes that it's poised to do so from a price standpoint.
All right, well, in a couple of minutes that we have left, as we, I suppose, in the next few weeks, as we get nearer to April 15th, we should talk about tax situations and what's a good thing to do here as you're getting your taxes prepared, and how can you can use that time of year to start analyzing some of your, some of your tax problems going forward or tax situations going forward and how you can deal with those.
Well, we'll start getting a lot more information coming up and articles popping because things are going to be different for 2014 than they were for 2013, largely because of the additional taxation and how taxes have changed largely as a result of Obamacare. Now, I'm not giving an opinion either, good or bad, but there are going to be changes in that, especially with portfolios as we design and move portfolios from one place to another. I suspect that what's going to end up happening into the future as a result of Obamacare is that if you have a large portfolio, that portfolio is going to be taxed differently, and we in our industry and everybody who's listening is going to have to look at it and say, well, if we sell this amount of investments or reinvestments out of here, are we going to have additional tax on this? Now, it doesn't appear it's going to be a problem on IRA accounts, but it appears though it's going to be a problem on non-IRA accounts where there's an additional tax because of the amount of money we sell. So that might change how and what type of a structure we do investing stuff. We might have to invest stuff over the course of 2 years or two calendar years just to try to keep some of that tax down because there's going to be an additional tax. It appears on transactions are going to be over $250,000. So, and that's, of course, buy and sold over $250,000, less than that last. So that's going to be some things that we'll have to address coming forward, and perhaps we can look at that. Certainly there will be some articles that we can reference coming up in the next few months.
All right, what about this big merger between Comcast and Warner Cable, which will make them the biggest cable company in the country? A lot of people are upset by this. I think the Congress might take a look at the ramifications of this merger, and a lot of analysts are saying the deal could create the biggest cable bills in the country. Comcast stock went up a little over 1%. Warner Cable was up a little bit as well, a little under 1% on the news. What do you think about that and that transaction going forward?
You know, I don't know if I had necessarily have an opinion of it. At some point in time, it's almost going to have a monopolistic type of thing to get.
Right.
People can have a monopoly. You know, just for example, we have locally inside of the Wausau area, Charter, and they're the only player that's there at the moment. And so from it, they have the ability to seemingly charge wherever they want to. And I think eventually we start having technology where we can have other things come in. For example, we have Charter that... if you have an iPad, you can watch TV anywhere inside of your house because it'll stream Wi-Fi to your iPad or your phone or wherever you want to do it. So I think eventually what ends up happening is we see this stuff start happening more and more through the Internet. And if that becomes the case, a merger of this magnitude really doesn't matter anymore because the technology will be on what they have to do. But I think there's going to, of course, it's going to have to pass the the Federal Trade Commission to see if it's monopolistic or not with these two merging. So we'll see. Does it make sense to shareholders? Well, it seems to be going up, and there might be some synergy back and forth. Remember, Time Warner was also the one who swallowed up AOL, or AOL actually bought Time Warner at the time. But, you know, those two merged together, and everybody thought that it was going to be a brilliant thing with a big company, with being able to cable to the Internet and that whole bit. Well, then AOL fell apart.
Yeah, well, everything I've seen on social media this week says that this is the merger from hell when it comes to consumers, that nobody is going to like this unless maybe you're a stockholder of one of these two companies. But we'll see what happens going forward. We're almost out of time for today.
One thing I want to put out here that's going to change some things. Let me make sure I say this. I know we're getting close on time. Just this past week, we have now the federal government has now okayed banks for doing business with pot manufacturers.
Right, the legal pot dispensaries can now take their money to a bank. There was some talk about that not being allowed, but that certainly
now popped up, and this is going to change a lot of things because it now opens it up for not only banks but also for states and for the federal government to start collecting tax dollars on this.
Right.
So I put this out there because we want to watch this because this is going to come up and have major ramifications in the future, guys.
All right. Well, if folks want to get hold of you on Monday, how can they do that?
Monday morning, I will be bright and sunshiny in my office in Wausau, Wisconsin. Come in and visit us. Grab us for a cup of coffee on 3rd Avenue and Bridge Suites. Street. Come on in and see if you can catch us for a cup of coffee and come on in and visit. Or give us a call, 715-849-3600. Or toll free outside of the Wausau area at 866-355-5100. Or find us online at KelchandAssociates.com.
All right. Safe trip back. We'll talk to you again down the road.
Very good. We'll see you next week.
Merle Kelch, Kelch & Associates in Wausau, on Making Financial Sense here on WSAU. It's coming up on 9 o'clock. We've got the news on the way, and then the polka shows as well. And then tonight it's Badger hockey once again. The Badgers taking on Ohio State. And they lost last night. They'll try to get the Buckeyes tonight right here, pregame show at 6:30 on WSAU.
Are you afraid to upset someone for fear it'll set off a drinking bout? Do you make threats such as, if you don't stop drinking, I'll leave you? Do you feel there's no one who understands your problems? Al-Anon family groups are for relatives and friends who have been affected by a loved one's drinking. No one needs to continue suffering from the effects of someone else's drinking problem. There's anonymity, confidentiality, and safety in Al-Anon family groups. There's also understanding and support, and there's always hope, because people in Al-Anon have experienced the same kinds of fear and pain. Are you troubled by someone else's drinking? You might be surprised at what you could learn in an Al-Anon family group from people just like you. For more information, go to alanon.org or call 1-888-4-ALANON to find an Al-Anon meeting near you.
News, talk, sports. WSAU Wausau, WSAU FM, Rudolph, Stevens Point, Marshfield, Wisconsin Rapids.
Fox News Radio. I'm Chris Foster. There's been an accident at the Winter Olympics, and a big game's going on now. Live to Sochi, Russia, and Fox News Radio's Jessica Gallagher.
Chris, it's a big day for Team USA today in men's hockey, America taking on Russia. The score is tied 2-2, and they're now in overtime. President Vladimir Putin is even in the stands. Meanwhile, unfortunately, the first injury at the Olympics here in the Black Sea Resort town of Sochi. Russian skier Maria Komissarova broke and dislocated her back during a practice run at the Rosa Couture Extreme Park. The accident happened when she was doing the jump, Chris.
Jessica Gallagher in Sochi, Russia. Well, it was close, with workers at a Volkswagen plant in Chattanooga, Tennessee, voting against joining the United Auto Workers Union. 3 days of balloting ended last night with 712 no's to 626 votes in favor. This would have been the first foreign automobile plant in the United States to unionize. Nature intrudes again.